Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We begin with ISIS and its intentions and what's going on with its particular brand of statecraft. Documents and communications from within ISIS show a detailed approach to succession. ISIS intends to outlive its current leadership, whether it dies from natural causes or as a consequence of the turmoil in the region or strikes by U.S. forces. Our partner, the New York Times, says that ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi has detailed succession plans, that he's learned from the mistakes of other terrorist groups like al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula, an organization that's been decimated by U.S. drone strikes, particularly in Yemen. Joining us is Eric Schmidt, national security correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. Eric, thanks again for joining us.
Hi, John.
It's an interesting window that you're seeing into ISIS through these documents. What kinds of sources and what information are you looking at?
Well, the source documents, John, come from the raid that U.S. Special Operations Forces conducted in late May on the hideout of a top ISIS financier named Abu Sayyaf. And in there, they learned information about the revenue streams that ISIS has, including their how they sell oil, how they arrange their kidnap for ransom payments. But they also learned, as you said, a little bit more about the structure and hierarchy that Baghdadi has, his top lieutenants in both Syria and Iraq.
Is this a militia? Is this more like a dictatorship? Is there a model here for governance?
Well, what's interesting is he clearly, at least according to most of the sources that I, my colleague Ben Hubbard and I talked to, he is clearly in charge. He is giving the direction, but he's also pushed and delegated authority down to what's called a ruling Shura Council. It's kind of like a governing cabinet. He has a war minister, an energy minister, things that take care of the day-to-day duties of the Islamic State. After all, they have declared a state. But then he also has a number of former Iraqi army officers, Baathists, who are the military commanders. And then in addition to that, there are regional emirs, local governors, if you will, in Iraq and Syria. So they each are delegated authority following a general description of the priorities that Baghdadi sets.
How centralized is all of this in the city of Raqqa in Syria, where Baghdadi spends most of his time? Or is it distributed out to be less vulnerable to drone attacks and attacks from the air?
Well, the core leadership is in Raqqa, but they've been savvy. They've kind of learned the lessons of previous groups. They've surrounded themselves with civilians. They're in buildings that the United States knows basically where they are, but it is very difficult to hit them without causing a lot of civilian casualties. But as you said, they've also delegated authority out to other commanders who are in different parts of Syria and different part of Iraq. So if any one of them were killed, a lieutenant would be able to move up and take over those responsibilities, and that applies even to Baghdadi and his headquarters.
Is there a Baghdadi vision here, his particular notion of statecraft, or is it just basically Baghdadi is trying to impose the Quran and that's the end of it?
Well, no, it's certainly the latter. I mean, he is trying to revive the classic caliphate that existed back in the 8th century at this time, and in doing so is calling on Quranic verses and all, and his stature in that. But he's also the statecraft that is involved here involves carrying out the day-to-day workings of a government, such as it is, picking up trash, making sure the lights are on, issuing fishing licenses, as my colleague Tim Arango reports this morning in the New York Times. So there's a number of things that they're trying to do. Of course, they're under pressure with the coalition air campaign and fighting that's going on around them.
How secure is ISIS from this document? Is this aspirational, or do they really have an operation that's working very, very well in terms of revenue, in terms of handing out bureaucratic paperwork of one kind or another?
Well, so far, I mean, it's working as well as you might expect when you have basically the whole world is fighting you. They've set up a state. They actually have people coming to visit, coming to live there, and they do to one extent or the other, depending on where they are. They are carrying out this vision. This is the vision that Baghdadi announced over a year ago, and it's the difference, really, one of the main differences between ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, of course, that was aspirational on the part of bin Laden. He didn't think they were ready for this. Baghdadi says, yes, we are, and we're taking the territory, and we're going to do, despite the attacks that we're coming under, we're going to continue to try and push ahead with our version of what he calls the Islamic State.
The people under Baghdadi, anything about them? Do they have the charismatic style of some of the other leaders in these organizations we've seen since 9/11?
We don't know a whole lot more about them. There's two groups. There's they're the former al-Qaeda in Iraq militants who've been with Baghdadi for more than a decade. And then there are these Ba'athist former Iraqi commanders that I mentioned. There are two individuals, one guy named al-Afri, who's a former top deputy to Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, who's the former militant leader in Iraq. And then a second guy, Fadl al-Halawi, also known as Takmani, who's a former Iraqi special forces officer. These are seen as the two top deputies to Baghdadi, and al-Afri in particular is the one who's believed to be the heir apparent. There have been reports that both of these guys were killed in airstrikes over the last several months, but sources I talked to said they probably survived.
Interesting details from inside ISIS, reported there by Eric Schmidt, national security correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, John.